Rock.
Looking at a black screen.
Because Dick Boy's in charge, that's why.
I mean, he's usually... I don't know. At least the TV's on, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I don't see squat right now, though.
Yeah, I guess you've got a Nimrod in charge of the...
John!
Because only an idiot can't work a remote. That's all I have to say.
Yes.
Do you see a problem in the studio?
I see two dickheads.
Mr. Funny
you
Man.
Turned on the TV. Fancy that.
He didn't even mean to do that, you can tell. What do we got?
Happy now, celebration.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm real happy right now.
This is good. Looks like a fucking Commodore program on a computer.
You know, I pulled this out. I mean, it's this old.
It looks it.
But I pulled this out because,
nice.
And we mentioned this last show, but we saw these boys here recently.
Yeah.
And I'm still fucking
This is post-Cape, yeah.
I'm still so jacked over that show.
Dude, why is Adam such a fucking goofball? For being such a badass fucking songwriter.
I know.
He's such a goofy fuck, dude.
If you hadn't guessed, we're watching Killswitch Engage. This is an older show with Howard Jones.
He's not even there now. He disappeared. He's like, I don't even want to be on stage. I'm embarrassed.
This is World Ablaze.
This was shot in 2005, so 12 years ago.
And they still got old boy on Howard Johnson on the vocals, right?
Yeah.
Or Howard Jones.
Howard Johnson.
Howard Jones. Before he went off to the hotel business.
Sure. He opened up a hotel chain.
I just love that Count Chocula was on guitar, Holmes.
Oh, shit. Fucking Adam's goofy as fuck.
He's so fucking goofy.
Oh, God, we laughed at him so much
he's
in that show.
He's so fucking goofy, but he's like, he's jamming the whole time. He's acting like a dork. He's playing the shit out of the guitar.
Does not miss a note.
Yeah.
Acts like a freaking moron.
But he's such a fucking badass guitarist.
He really is.
And he's like basically the guy behind the whole band, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, he's the main, like, I mean, when the, aside from the lead singer, I mean, he's the main songwriter. He's probably, I think, doesn't he do some of the producing, too? He's probably huge on the promotion end of it. I mean, the guy's all into this band. And yet he's so fucking goofy, dude. Didn't you say he had, like, fucking medical issues, too?
Who, Howard?
Adam.
I think he had some back problems or something like that. Probably for jumping around like a moron.
He fucked himself up permanently.
I'm trying to think. You know, when we saw him, he had a knee brace on, too, didn't he?
Not a metal one or anything, but, like, one of those soft, like, sort of, like, something you see runners wear or something.
So, yeah, I think he may suffer from some stuff here and there, I guess. But I think the back thing was the thing where he didn't want to tour anymore.
He hurt himself trick-or-treating, didn't he?
Yeah, shit.
He's still trick-or-treating. He's like, I will never stop dressing up and getting candy from people.
And we actually, years ago, we talked to Mike D, the bass player.
Uh-huh.
And It was funny. I was we were at the show. I was wearing my Beards Arrest shirt.
We laughed. We cried.
Yeah, the drummer on it, and Mike's like, "Look at that fucking bald asshole up there. He's wearing that shirt."
And you're like, "You just call me an asshole? Hold it. I'm coming down there."
He's like, "Thank you."
No, he just everybody stops and is quiet while you make your way. Excuse me.
Pardon me.
Make your way down. Get up the stage. Punch him in the fucking mouth. Then back upstage. Excuse me. Pardon me. Pardon
exactly.
me. Excuse me.
I just want to make sure you call me an asshole. Not like, him an asshole.
You talking to me? All right. So seriously, how you doing, Paisan?
Oh, awesome. Awesome. And still jacked over the show. Anthrax.
I tell, dude. It was a killer fucking show. It was
Jesse
some serious jamming.
We were both a little skeptical of Jesse because we were both huge Howard guys.
Yeah, and he fucking brought it, dude.
Oh,
he was
really
all over it, and he was totally engaged the shit out of the audience. He was in the fucking audience half the time.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Went out there fucking moshing with people.
Yeah.
Then got his ass back upstage. I was like, damn, this dude's all into it, bringing it to the people. And, the energy never fucking dipped, you know?
No,
it was just on the whole time.
Took it as fast.
Crazy ass Adam.
So, yeah, anyway, guys, if the tour comes to your town, you got to go see them.
Oh, yeah. Do yourself
Killer
a favor,
man. Show,
man. Killswitch Engage is always. Never seen a bad Killswitch show.
Never. And back in the day, around this time, around 05, every time they toured, we were there.
Oh, fuck yeah.
We saw them like two
Yeah, for a while we were
right?
seeing them, yeah. We think we saw them like twice, at least twice in 1 year one time, I think.
They had become our secondary maiden. They come to town, we're there.
Yeah, Killswitch is great. I mean, just think that's killer fucking tunes, dude. And everybody tripped when the big song came on.
Yeah. The End of Heartache.
Fuck yeah, dude. And we were like, this is Howard's, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But he fucking Jesse sang the shit out of it,
sounded
dude.
Sounded good, I gotta say. He won me over.
Yep.
I mean, I still like Howard a lot, but Jesse, I've accepted Jesse in the
At
band.
The end, I saw you pulled out that rose and you threw it to him.
I did. You had kind of that bachelor thing.
And he caught it in his teeth
rose.
And he just looked at you.
Yeah, he did. That was
and I was like, this is so fucking sweet.
It was weird because they put that little red light on him and stuff.
Mm-hmm. To accent his eyes.
Yeah.
So anyway,
they sparkled, right?
I can't believe how beautiful they look.
Well, I tell you what. Before we get to the beer, do you want to do new Killswitch or some Howard Jones Killswitch? Some Howie?
Some new.
A new?
In honor of Jesse and how he did such a good job, let's give him the props and play one of the new stuff.
I really was digging In Due Time.
Oh, nice. Okay, there you go.
Let's do that.
loving Adam's cutoffs. I'm just going to say it. I mean, he's a cutoff connoisseur, apparently. He's cultivated this look.
He did. What is wrong with him?
He's so fucking crazy. And what's funny is I bet when you meet him, he's super fucking professional.
Yeah.
He's not goofing around at all. He's like, hello, sir, how are you? It's good to meet you. Thank you.
Thank you for coming to our show. We
really appreciate the patronage.
Thank you, kind sir.
I know. We value your patronage. Thank you.
He's very, like, prim and proper.
Yeah, and he's handing you fucking catalogs and stuff. Here's an example of our work if you'd like to check it out.
Went to a boarding school.
No shit. Speaks perfect fucking diction and everything.
Fancy lad college.
Fancy lad.
Because I'm a fancy lad.
That's right. Would you like a fish stick kitty?
Fish stick kitty.
We gotta have fish stick kitties, Holmes. Tell, get the word down to the kitchen. I want Turtlehead to make me some fish
stick kitties.
Fish stick kitties.
Done. Done and done.
It's on the menu.
All right, Mr. G.
As soon as I saw this at the store, liquor store, L-I-K-K-A, the liquor store, I had to text that sucker to you so you could check it out, and you were like,
yes.
You were like, get that or you die. So I had to do it. It's ooh, it looks pretty.
Oh, it's that a is pretty nice. Beer, Bob.
Oh, yeah. One of our favorite breweries.
Yeah,
agreed. Without question. We've watched them grow from little lads. It's Clown Shoes Brewery. They're amazing. I love the variety. We still got a Genghis Pecan Pie Porter hanging out waiting for us. But this is one of the latest. I'm always on the lookout for the latest new Clown Shoes. And the new one just came out. I'm fucking excited about this. One of the biggest things about them, as we, you know, when we talk about the labels, is the they're awesome illustrations. I don't know who does their artwork, but they're awesome, dude. And the latest one they've done is a Saison. It's a blueberry Saison. I think it is blueberry, right? No, Black Currant Saison. Black Currant,
yeah.
Black Currant. One of my favorites because I always like going to, there's a local restaurant here. I don't know if it's anywhere else in the world, but it's Cafe Express. And they have Black Currant iced tea.
Oh, wow.
So it's just black tea, but it's flavored with Black Currant. It's fucking delicious, really? Dude. I could drink like gallons of that shit.
It's fucking phenomenal.
It's fucking phenomenal. I dig the new stuff. But this one, Black Currant, is used to flavor this Saison. And on the cover, they've got this big elephant. Of course, he's wearing the clown shoes. And he's like in a field, just like, yay! Like
field
he's playing.
Holmes.
He's excited, Holmes. He's just happy to be alive. And the Black Currant Saison, let's see what we can read off of here. Find out what they have to say about it. See what they get to say for themselves. All right, so on the label it says, why did the elephant paint his nails purple? So he could hide in a black currant bush. This semi-tart saison is brewed with acidified malt and black currant puree. It inspires us to rhyme. We sat in a hush, speaking of things from the land of Kush. When, whoa, an elephant with a heavy... I think I ought to say it the other way, so I'll reset it. We sat in a bush, speaking of things from the land of Kush, when, whoa, an elephant with a heavy tush snuck into our black currant bush.
Is this hooked on phonics?
Fucking sounds like it. I think it's supposed to be hush, but then that doesn't rhyme with the rest of it. In any case, it's just ale blue with black currant puree. Let's see what the ABV on this sucker is. I don't even think they say. Yeah, it's 6% by volume, and it's your classic, you know, 650 milliliter bottle. You know, the black, the clown shoes labels are always those illustrated ones. Yeah. They're beautiful. They do a really nice job. One of my favorite illustrators in the beer business. And let's move on. We got a beautiful looking,
nice.
I mean, it's
really
nice. It looks like iced tea color, you know. A little reddish, darker, a little brownish, a little yellowish. beautiful lacing. Yeah, wow,
burgundy look at looking, right?
Yeah, almost like it's some sort of a lambic or something.
Almost looks like a like a Belgian.
Yeah,
or
yeah, a nice Tropel or something. Yeah, I'd give this a 4 on the looks.
Oh, yeah.
And the lacing's gorgeous. Nice soapy lacing.
Oh, yeah.
Let's give it a sniff. Mmm, complex.
Yeah, totally.
Almost smells like I'm smelling toast or something. It's funky. Maybe kind of malty or something, I guess, or barley-ish or something.
Mine's a little peppery. Like, it's a couple of
notes, it's the saison. Yeah, you know, they're always kind of peppery and spicy. Almost smells like tuna fish, but in a good way, you know, like a like apples and something like that. Maybe this one's smelling like apples and fruits. Tell your mom to close her legs. Oh! This guy.
Enough, dude.
I know.
He's back with the one-liner.
Smell, I give it like a 3. That's like a classic saison with a little fruity saison.
Smells watery.
Like, okay, let's see. Let's go for this.
Cheers.
Nice.
A little watery. A little tart at the end.
It's a little spicy, but you can taste it's refreshing. You can taste that black currant. It's nice.
Like on a hot day.
Yeah, it's a nice black currant flavor to it. That's not bad. I think it'll it'll taste better as we go on and like warm up a little bit, but the flavor is nice. It's very complex. I mean, if you're not ready for a saison, a fruity saison, you don't normally get a fruity saison.
Right.
Saison is usually kind of peppery, kind of spicy, and kind of earthy. This is that, but it's also fruity, so it's a little confusing.
Sure.
But it's good. I have a feeling it's 47 degrees now. I think as it warms up about another 10 degrees, might really more flavors will come out.
Sure.
But it's not bad. I'd give that, you know, on the taste, I'd give that a solid 3, maybe 3.5, but more like a 3, I think.
I'm digging it. I dig the new tunes.
Might go up. And then for the mouthfeel, I think you were right. It's a little watery.
A little watery, yeah.
So, you know, maybe like a 3 on that one.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Overall, I mean, right now, we might change our minds. But right now, I'd give it a 3, 3.5.
Yeah, I think the taste is enough to where I think you might could go 3.5 with it.
Yeah, and I'm already starting to taste a little more complexity. It's starting to open up a little bit. Not bad, not bad. We'll see how that goes. We'll keep you informed. So, a little tunage?
Yeah, let's go with a band called Noise Pollution.
Oh, nice.
Rock and roll with Noise Pollution.
That's picking up nice.
The name of the album is Unreal, and the song we're going to play is Hole Inside Me Head.
Oh.
Or Hole Inside Me. Not Me Head. Just inside me somewhere.
I'll let you find it.
Check out this Noise Pollution.
Too. Yeah, they're not too shabby.
Not too shabby. So, anyway, let's get on to our topic. Man, I'm just loving this, dude. I gotta say. Again, I'm not gonna say anymore. Go see Killswitch. The band is fucking amazing.
Do yourself a favor. They're a great lot.
You forget how badass they are, you know?
Yeah, their music's good generally, but... And as we know now, with Jesse or Howard, it doesn't matter.
Right.
You can't go wrong.
Let me ask you this, seeing the show. Anthrax put on a hell of a show, too.
Oh, they were awesome.
Out of the show, who was your fave? Who put on the better show for you? Munchkin was Anthrax.
I was going to say, I think I was more satisfied by Anthrax.
Really?
Killswitch was fantastic. Don't get me wrong. But I'd give it to Anthrax.
I really loved Anthrax, but I got really geeked.
You were loving for the Killswitch?
I think you saw.
I think so. We totally enjoyed it. Yeah, the show was a killer success either way.
Great double bill. Old and new.
That was a good mix.
And then the opening band, Devil Wears Prada. Those guys were pretty good.
Yeah, I'd heard of them, but I never knew any of their music. They were really good.
I'd heard the name. Didn't know much about
them. Put on a good show. They were, thought that one fucking bass player was going to just break his neck the way he was fucking. He was getting into it, dude. I was like, dude, ease up. You got the whole night.
I was like, calm down, pal. I tell you what, let's play some Devil Wears Prada. We'll do a little DC here.
Nice.
I'll pick out a tune that we like from the show. Here you go.
Says, you know what? I'm going to do this.
Oh, look at him. So, next show for us, big show, is Evergrey coming up here in a few weeks.
That's going to be nice.
But anyway, I want to get to some news. Big news.
Nosing around.
Oh, dude, if you could find a music for that. That could be our news section, Holmes.
I love it.
So anyway, some developments I thought that was pretty big in the history of heavy metal this week was Zakk Wylde and Ozzy are getting back together.
Yeah, what was that about?
I don't know. Thoughts? Do you have thoughts? I'll tell you my thoughts.
Go for it.
You kind of know my thoughts, but I'm kind of bummed to see Gus G go.
I know.
I know
that you're bummed.
I like the Zakk era.
Yeah.
But I'm not clamoring for it. I want to see what he would do different with Gus G.
What I think is I'm totally happy to see Zakk back with Ozzy. But I love Gus G too. The thing is, we didn't get a long enough time with Gus to get any sort of sense of where we were going to go with that. And so it seems like, well, this is too soon. This is like something you do where Gus is in there. He's been in there for years, done two or three albums at least. And then they go, you know what? Let's go back and do a little quick thing with Zakk, because I know you guys are still remembering, still thinking about it, and then you knock it out. He only did one fucking album. It's like he hasn't been gone long enough to miss, you know what I mean? It's like we're still kind of going, you know, this Gus G is pretty awesome. You know, let's see what they can do. And it's like, hold up. It's time for a reunion with Zakk. It's like, oh, the fucker just left. You know, come on.
I think I've grown to like Zakk so well with Black Label that I don't care
you don't
to
need
see
him
back
with
in
Ozzy. Yeah. I mean, the Ozzy stuff's there. What I haven't heard is Gus playing the Ozzy stuff with Zakk stuff. How does
that
sound?
That's what I'm going to hear, yeah.
You haven't had a chance to hear any of it yet, huh? Okay, so see? It's like you can't... You usually bring them back because you're missing them.
Right.
We haven't had a chance to miss them yet, so it seems weird to have them back. It's like it's too soon. It's like, wait a minute, hold up, you know?
And the whole knock on Zakk when he left was, hey, Ozzy's starting to sound like Black Label.
Right.
So it's going to probably sound like that again if they do new material.
Right. So they do one album with Gus and go, finally, some fresh blood. And it's like, all right, quick, get Zakk back in. It's like, what, you just changed it.
Honestly, and if it's for ticket sales, is that really going to help ticket sales having Zakk Wylde back in the band? I don't think so.
I don't know. I don't think it'll necessarily hurt or anything. But I'm just like I said, it's like you're answering a need that wasn't necessarily there.
Right.
I think that's weird.
let's put this scenario. What if Marty Friedman goes back to Megadeth and replaces Kiko Loureiro?
Now, that's more of a reunion, because it's been years since he's been in there.
Right. But, again, Kiko's had the one record with Megadeth. Not a very good record. I thought it was kind of a weak record.
That's fine. But, I mean,
I saw them live with Megadeth, and they were amazing.
I'm sure they were, yeah. And they're coming again soon.
Right.
And I'm thinking of going to see them, because it's not just them. It's Meshuggah and Tesseract. And I'm like, I at least want to see Tesseract. I'm not necessarily thrilled about Meshuggah, but I wouldn't, you know, be upset about it. So, and then see Megadeth. I figure see Megadeth one or two more times, and then I was like, all right, I'm good.
I'm done.
You know. Before they get so bad that it's just kind of pathetic that they're still trotting themselves out. They're still good enough to be worth a show to listen to. But anyway, so my thing is, when was the last Marty Friedman record with Megadeth?
I think it was Risk. And I'm not sure what year that came out. Probably late 90s, mid to late 90s.
See, so it's been almost 20 years.
Yeah,
that's a valid comeback, you know.
Right.
And it's not like he's back to stay. It's like, just come back and play some shows with us. You don't have to do an album. Just play some shows with us. You know, like when they do those nostalgia tours, it's like,
well,
that's
it sounds
cool.
Like Gus was fired.
Oh,
from
really?
His statement, right?
That it seems like it, but I can't really tell. I mean, surely I actually didn't get that. You were saying it like it was like maybe you read it somewhere, but what little I heard from you didn't sound like he was replaced.
Well,
it just sounds like we're going to do a tour, and he's sort of stepping aside and go, "All right, enjoy your tour, and then when you come back, I'll pick back up doing albums." That's the feeling I got, even if he didn't necessarily say that outright. You're like, we don't know shit.
It's been long overdue, he says. But he thanks Ozzy and Sharon for his time playing with Ozzy.
Which to me doesn't necessarily mean goodbye. It just means, you know, I just want to let you know I'm not upset that you're bringing this dude in. It's sort of his way of sort of saying, hey, don't be, you know, don't worry, I'm not pissed off. I don't want you to think
that. I
think
he's done. I think he's off.
You really think he's out of there, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, 99 was Risk. That was the last. Uh-oh, it's the song, Holmes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think Gus is out.
That's wild, man. I didn't read that. But if it is, it is. I mean, it is what it is.
I mean, just from what I can get out of this.
All right. I hope you're wrong, because, like I said, it seems weird to go through the process of finding a new guy, getting him, having press conferences, going, I got a new guy. Here he is, Gus. It's going to be great. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, do an album, do a tour, and then go, all right, you're out of here. I want the old guy back. That's bizarre. That doesn't make any sense. If you did that, did like, you know, a 5 albums or so, and then said, all right, let's get the other guy back. Not permanently, just let's do a tour with him because the fans want to see it. And then after you finish the tour, it's like, all right, cool. So let's go back to writing albums with me and this new guy, and we go back and pick up where we left off. That I could see.
Yeah.
So it's weird. Why fire him? It's like, you just got the guy.
Yeah.
What it could mean is, I'm just speculating, maybe he did something and Ozzy's like, you're out of here. I'm not cool with that. Like, you found out, you fart in your sleep. I can't. I'm just not sharing a tour bus with you guys. I don't know. You know what I mean? I mean, maybe they had a falling out somehow. And, or like, maybe, for all you know, Ozzy said.
I was sharing.
Or maybe all you know is Ozzy got in there and he said, wait a minute, I just hired you. We just did an album. Are you already off doing fucking tours, solo tours and shit? You're supposed to be my guy.
Oh, but he was doing Sabbath, so. What do you expect?
But he's the boss. He can do whatever he wants. It's not the same for the guy that works for him.
I guarantee it wasn't Ozzy. I guarantee it was Sharon was the one involved.
I thought Sharon isn't in it because, you know, they're going to divorce
still
or whatever.
Though.
Still?
Yeah.
She don't need that gig, man.
Didn't they reconcile, though?
Oh, did they?
Don't they always?
Then what's the point of the, you know, I'm done, I'm moving out or whatever, you know, that's just drama. Just
drama bullshit.
Oh, shit. I'm sick of drama, dude.
Sure.
That's for TNT. TNT does drama.
All right. Maybe Lars will know something.
I hope not. I'm not looking forward to him knowing anything.
Hey, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lars is in the green room.
Okay, keep him in there.
Forever.
Get him that hot milk and those
hemlock
Oreos
muffins.
Without the centers.
Yeah. You mean cookies?
Yeah.
They're basically just cookies.
No, it is Ryder. It was Oreos with the cream scraped out.
Uh-huh.
Oh, thank you.
Good
It said scraped out, not added in.
Get off the fucking speaker box, but
quit making your own double stuffs. All right.
Okay, enough. We'll get to him later.
Okay.
Because I know Genghis can't wait to talk to Lars.
Oh, I can wait.
New record.
I can wait forever.
So, I'm just giving my two cents. Sharon said,
Ozzy, you're not doing it right. Mm. You got to get Zach back. We need to get the family back together. Gus is a great boy, but he's just not. He's not the one for us.
The fuck are you doing?
I don't know.
I'm not in control of this.
But I guarantee it, man. Basically, every decision that's made is her.
It's probably her, yeah. That's true.
So, but, oh. I mean, if anybody were to come back, and no offense to Zach, Zach's a great guitar player.
Oh, yeah. I love
him in Black Label.
And I loved him with Ozzy. I thought he was fine with Ozzy.
Yeah. But I would say get Jakey Lee back. Let's see what that motherfucker
we want to go with
do.
Old... That, yeah. That's a fucking reunion.
I'm excited about that.
That's a reunion.
But you know what? I'll tell you this. I told somebody the other day, I said, you know, if Ozzy comes with Gus G, I want to go. I'm going to go.
Oh, yeah.
If he's coming with Zach, I don't think I'm going to go.
You know, Firewind came recently. Did you check them out? Uh-huh. You just pretend you fall asleep, just fall over.
When they come?
It wasn't that long ago.
Thanks, I didn't want to know.
I'm pretty sure I told you.
Where did they play?
Oh, it doesn't matter where they play. You missed them.
You.
Look at you. Like, I need to know all the details of the shit I blew off.
You're making shit up now.
Give me all the details of something I'm going to blow off.
They were here sometime. They played that place, you know?
With the people at.
At that time.
Over on that street. Next to that building. Smart ass. No, let me find them, since it's so important to you to know what tour you fucked up. Like, I need to know exactly where I dropped the ball.
This almost turned into kind of a sour.
It is, and I know that's the thing.
As it
warms
up. You're
slowly pushing IPAs on me. Gracious fellow that I am, I'm slowly accepting them.
You son of a
bitch.
But
you refuse to accept the sours.
This is good. I like it.
Exactly.
I drink it.
See?
Again.
Exactly.
Oh, dude, I got that dogfish, the one with the black limes.
Oh, I read about that. So you got that one, huh?
Oh, yeah. It's fucking amazing.
Nice. There you go. See?
Because it's slightly sour, but the limes, it tastes like someone got a fresh lime and just squeezed it in the beer. It's not like sweetened or anything like
that. See, they were here in March 2013.
Oh, shit. I must have missed that
one. Don't know how I missed that. I must have slipped over.
That's only 4 years ago.
It seemed like they were here last year.
Johnny Timely.
Well, this is not in Setlist, this shitty website.
Timmy Timer.
You're fired. You really worked. I could see the sweat on your brow. Like
Stanley Stockwatch.
Think it should, calm yourself. This guy. You're going to bust a vessel over there.
Dude, he just put the mic up Adam's ass. He's like, hey, I like that, right?
Is all done if I can
he
get
goes,
it out.
I'm going to run with Big Ape. Maybe I can take off.
No shit. Fucking Adam. He really is like a big kid.
Yeah.
He's like, wee. Maybe I'm thinking of the 70,000 tons of metal. They've been on that one.
Oh, yeah, that was out of the Galveston.
No, it was out of Florida, but still.
Oh, sure. Same Florida, thing. Galveston.
Same
What's
thing.
What's the difference?
Yeah, same thing. All the same to BP.
So, yeah, just wanted to touch on that because...
You had nothing else.
I got to say, I'm kind of bummed. And again, it's no offense to Zach. I love Zach. Great guitar player. But
he's a Lego maniac, Holmes.
He likes his Legos.
So I like to step on them and break them under me feet.
So, that was one big thing I wanted to bring up. I'm trying to think of another thing in metal news that came up recently.
See that vein stick out on your forehead? I know this.
Well, let me ask you this. A band like Rat's coming back.
No comment.
Do you care?
Rat.
It's Stephen Piercy.
Warren's back.
Warren D. Martini.
And homeboy
Carlos Cavazos.
Oh, okay.
Juan Couchier. Yeah, but Bobby Blotzer's out. He's doing his thing. He's doing his former rat.
No.
I forget who the drummer is. Like
Bobby Blotzer's rat. That's lame. Yeah. Only it's like a trademark thing, so he has to do rat with three T's.
Oh, they're all like
rat.
Over it.
That would be awesome. It's RRATTT with an umlaut over the A. Rat.
But apparently Percy's straight. He's cleaned up and all
I'm
that
glad
stuff.
He's straight. He would come.
What?
He's not when I fucked him.
No, it's not straight.
What are you saying?
You like to suck the cock.
Dude, those are some pretty bold accusations.
I'm just joking.
Pretty bold cock.
Hey, Colin, your boy's over there talking shit on a national syndicated podcast. You gonna, what are you gonna do? You gonna raise his ass in?
Oh, shit. What the fuck's wrong with you? I go to take a shit and you guys are out here talking all kinds of craziness.
What's old Riley doing up there?
Look, don't even worry about that shit. You guys made me turtle head back there in the bathroom and I don't like it. You know how long it's going to take to get that shit out?
What is Bill O'Reilly doing up in the booth?
It's none of your fucking business, all right? You guys are asking too many questions. What are these lights doing on in here? Get the lights off. This is all private.
Private? It doesn't look too private to me, dude. Look, he closes the shades. This
well,
fucking
we don't
guy.
Look at him anymore.
I know, we see the shadows of him. What the fuck is happening up there?
It's a commotion.
It's the beast with two backs. No, I don't even want to talk about it.
I hate when the blinds are down, and then you see that one blind just kind of creep up.
I know, like,
and someone's staring.
Like he's watching, like we don't know he's
we
fucking
don't know
watching
who it
us.
Is.
You can just practically hear that blind.
Yeah. Is it like John? Is it McCheese?
It's like, what the
is
fuck?
Is it O'Reilly?
Well, we know it's McCheese.
It
he's got that fucking white gloved hand that opens up.
Yeah, I see that.
Like we don't fucking know.
Look in the corner. You see Eddie?
Silly son of a bitch. Trying to take credit for it all.
Oh, shit. Okay, well, another reunion of sorts. Tracy Guns is back with LA Guns with Phil Lewis.
Yep.
And they had two factions going on.
She was always something special.
You care?
Not
were
really.
You ever an LA Guns fan?
I mean, I liked, you know, the hits that came out back in the day, you know.
Favorite song?
You know what it is. The one song everybody
thing,
loves.
That song about that thing, yeah. About that motorcycle, about...
You know,
Ballad of Jane was okay.
Ballad of Jane, yeah. I knew it was Jane. I couldn't remember the rest of the Ballad of Jane.
Easy Action. I mean, there's some the first record.
Never
some,
Enough is probably my favorite. I like that song.
Why don't we play Never Enough?
I yeah, that's a good
forever.
Tune.
Let's
that's a good
that.
Tune. Said that cool. You could. That's where you could hear that Tracy had some licks, and I'm cool.
Dude,
with it.
I mentioned on the show before. But they were on this was this tour called Rock Never Stops. And it's after Phil was kicked out or whatever.
And then it stopped, didn't it?
But, dude, the singer was Ralph Sinise, who is Mike Starr in Steel Panther.
Oh.
Was front of the band.
Nice.
And, dude, I saw Tracy for the first time live. That motherfucker wailed.
I know. You told me that he can rip,
dude. He was so impressive live. And I told him when I interviewed him a couple years ago, I was like, I saw you live that one time. I don't think I said, I never respected you as a guitar player until I saw you that night. But I told him, I said, dude, I was so impressed. You were just ripping like a madman. It was insane how good this guy was. You know
nice.
What I'm saying?
Nice.
You follow. You hate
I hear you.
So,
I told him I thought you sucked ass until I saw you last night.
I didn't know shit.
That's cool. Yeah, I just remember the video and just even this little licks he did in there. And I go, that's more than stuff I've seen him do other places. And it was just a hint, you know, at what kind of skill the dude had. And you just wonder, why doesn't he just play with this all the time? You know what I mean? Just be another one of those rippers. But I guess maybe sometimes you have a little more respect for those guys that are like, I can rip if I want to. It's just I don't feel it fits the song. It's not about just, you know, dicking around on guitar just to impress people. It's about making a good song. I can respect that.
Yeah, I get that. I get that.
I think that's how he feels about it.
Well, I think you kind of got to do that. And I'm sure you can't just... A lot of these guitar players can't really show what they can do until they get live anyway, you know?
And that's where they kind of let loose. And that's pretty cool. I can dig that. I like that spontaneity of it.
Yeah, me too. Me too. As far as other people reuniting, I'm not really sure of any. To be honest, that... Are you know, who would you like to see get back together? You know, Dokken is now, they said, we're not playing any more shows past these couple of shows. We're going to do this thing. We're going to do the little tour of Japan. And then we're done. Okay, so Dokken's coming to town, and it's the original band. You going?
Possibly. Depends on where it is. If they're opening for somebody at, like,
your backyard.
Toyota Center.
Your backyard.
And I'd be like, what the fuck are you guys doing here? I'm calling the cops.
Get out of here.
No, that's the thing. If it's a small venue,
yes.
Like a club show, and it's those guys, fuck yeah, I'm all about it. But if they're just like, well, yeah, we're getting back, and we're opening for some other band on some giant tour at, you know, Toyota Center, someone's like, well, I don't know that that's so worth it.
Is Dokken a big enough band to headline like a House of... They could probably do House of Blues, right?
Sure, I could see that.
With a good opening act?
Yeah, I can see that. Sure.
But if it's a Shed tour, they're going to have to open up for like a Def Leppard or a Poison or...
I guess my point is I value it more seeing a reunion of some of those guys. Because it's not like Jeff... And I don't mean this as a knock on any of these guys.
Sure.
Don's fine. Jeff's fine. They're all good musicians. But the obvious real shining star for us, you know, musicians or us, you know, guitar heads... is George Lynch. He was the man. And, because, I mean, like I said, as much as I like those guys, not a knock.
Another beer?
Sure. Not a knock, but if Jeff was replaced with some other bass player, I don't know that I'd necessarily notice.
Oh,
right?
Dude.
It's not like there was some amazing bass licks in Dokken.
Yes, but again, the backing vocals, Jeff.
So you always go for the vocal angle, and
yeah.
You're probably right. But, you know, you thought that about Howard Jones songs and fucking Jesse Lou singing the shit out of them.
But that's a lead vocalist. You're not talking about the backing.
It's just the backing vocals. I mean, if they were so good, they'd be lead. So that's.
But they add. I mean, and I'll tell you what. Last time I saw Dokken, Don can't hit the notes anymore. Jeff can't.
So he's doing it for him or something?
No.
We're kind of backing him up?
Yeah, he's backing him up.
And oh, weird.
I was listening to the radio to somebody, and they mentioned Steven Tyler. And apparently Steven Tyler has... like a ghost vocalist on stage that they acknowledge that helped him
hit the notes.
Yeah.
Literally. Wow. I've not heard of this phenomenon.
What? What?
I'm going to hit this fucking switch if you don't get to your point. Credit for what?
Okay,
for being a schmuck?
Listen to your... Yeah, being a fucking asshole. Okay, I listened to your show and you made the comment. It's something you read off the wire. said you read it on the wire.
Yeah, Joe Taylor texted me.
You just said it was Joe Perry.
I said Taylor. I'm in Texas coming right now. Yeah.
Whatever. Dude, calm the fuck down.
Dude.
I'm going to gas the booth, dude, is all I'm saying.
You need to go drop 4 feet. Just go with their fucking crop dust all over the place and then lock them in.
They're all just on the floor throwing up.
Okay, yeah. Can you get to your point?
No, shit.
I just say, this is any drop on volume. I'm going to have several occurrences over the next few months. If you go to my website at anytime.com, you can see my stuff, and I have about 3 books I'm guaranteed to sell out.
Yeah, yeah. You are guaranteed to sell out.
And if I don't sell out, I hide the books entirely that I sell out.
That makes a lot of sense.
It does, dickhead. It makes me more important than you. How many books do you have?
I have one book, and it says, Fuck You, Eddie. That's the name of it.
I'm done.
Wow. I didn't want to go there with him. But I felt like I had to.
Oh, you have to. Somebody has to. If not, I mean, it's part of his therapy, I think. You know what I mean? The guy needs therapy. And it's what we call tough love.
You want the Woot or you want the Brewers?
Let's go with the Woot.
Woot, Woot.
Little Woot Stout. Hey, these guys are rocking it. Like, I love these guys. The Switch, Holmes. Do we call them the Switch? The Gauge? The Kill?
We could call them the
Kill Gauge.
Kill Gauge. Kill Gauge 91. Here on Rock 97 FM. Oh, God. You were, I was telling the Metal Munch about the, you know, terrestrial radio.
Uh-huh.
And how it used to be cool. I said, you know.
Oh, yeah.
When I was a kid, unlike you, you were, I had to listen Pop Disney or whatever, the Radio Disney on satellite radio, whatever. Right. I go, back in the day, there were two rock stations in town, and I get the pops to, your papa to turn on the station, and if Gary Moore came on, Motley Crue, or
Grampy?
Van Halen, Grampy's, Grampy Jones, I'd be cranking it up. I'd be singing like a fucking idiot next to my pops, but, I go, what the dynamic's so different. We talked a little bit about it last show.
Yeah.
It's just so different now, the mediums of how the music gets out there. And, you know, I guess you got the social media, and I'm sure this Zach Wilde, Ozzy thing's just monster news to some people. I think some people are probably just so fired up. Me, not so much. I don't know. I mean, even the Guns N' Roses reunion, I don't care to see that.
Yeah.
I don't really care. I don't care to go see Metallica.
So that's what I mean.
Even though Lars is here, I mean.
And that's the thing. That's what I mean, as I was getting at earlier, is there's certain reunions that, yeah, it's cool that they're back together, but I don't know that I'm running to go check it out. And I love Dawkins, so don't get me wrong. But mostly, like I said, it's about Lynch. Pilsen's cool. I got nothing against Pilsen. I like Pilsen. I think he's a cool dude.
But you got Lynch who's there. You're saying you're going to go.
Lynch is there. Well, I mean, like I said.
Or is he going to take parting from me?
Like what you were just saying with whoever you were just talking about. Shit. What band you were talking about?
Guns N' Roses.
Yeah. You're like, we're like, I don't give a shit. And it's like, but it's Guns N' Roses. And if it's the original lineup, I mean.
It's not, though.
How's that any? Oh, who's it missing?
It's three people.
To me, all that would matter would be
Slash and Duff.
And to me, that's all that matters. The drummer, who the gives a fuck? Who is that? I don't even know who that
Steven
is.
Well, Steven Adler, it'd be cool to see him. He kind of got duped. So you want to see him get his...
I don't want to see him get screwed. I'm not saying...
Izzy Stradlin's like, you know, I don't really care.
Is it? Yeah, exactly.
He's making a shitload of money. He's like, you know, I don't care.
And yet he still doesn't care. See, that's interesting. Yeah. See, that's my thing. It's
good,
like,
for him.
And my thing is, it's like, the main dudes are what matters. And for Dawkin, it's Don Dawkin because he's the voice. And George Lynch because he's sort of the other voice. He's the guitar. If you substituted any drummer and bassist in there, forget the vocal part. I know you're all stuck on the vocal, but for,
sure,
just music-wise, I don't think you'd know the difference.
let me put this into the equation. Last time I saw Don couldn't hit a lot of the notes.
Okay.
He struggled.
Sure, fair enough.
So having to Pilsen backing him up would be beneficial.
And that's, I guess I separate it between, you know, vocals and music.
And typically, there's a lot of bands you could say, okay, as long as I got the guitarist and I have the singer.
Right, and I think it's similar. You feel the same way when it comes to, like, Van Halen. Even though I'm like, it's not like their backing vocals were fucking state-of-the-art or badass stuff. They weren't that great. But they are certainly unique, and it just doesn't sound the same without right. Michael Anthony and Eddie Van Halen doing those backing vocals. Sure. And I think even Alex did some backing vocals, didn't he? Although I doubt it.
So I know Eddie and
Minor.
Eddie
mostly
and
it was Eddie and Mike. Yeah, but the point is
mainly
it's like,
Mike.
And the point is, I'm like, you get sound alikes to do that if it's that important. Sure. I don't think that matters.
Well, I heard on the reunion tour when they dissed Mike, I heard that they played like
recordings or something. Exactly. So that's the thing. And I'm not saying that's cool or ethical. I'm just saying it can be handled.
It can be handled.
You can't reproduce Lynch. You know what I mean?
Right.
You've got to have Lynch. And you can't reproduce Don's voice unless you're totally just lip-syncing the whole fucking thing.
Sure.
So that's why I say I'm not so concerned about the rest of them. I'm not saying I don't want them there. I'm just saying it's not so important. So my point being, I'm not going to run down to go see Dokken just because all the original lineup's there. I'll run to see because it's Don and George. And if the rest aren't there, I don't really care.
I thought of something kind of funny the other day. And I wouldn't even think about this topic, but the song came on the radio or on my iPod. Another Day.
Right.
Theater, off Images and Words.
Killer song.
I was like, okay, they're doing this tour, doing Images and Words in its entirety. What if they got back Portnoy and Kevin Moore?
That would be the shit. I mean,
so
I'm not saying that, oh, thank goodness we got Kevin back because no one can play his stuff when he's not here. Jordan can play the fuck out of anything. So it's not like we haven't found replacements for Kevin and Mike that work just fine. But the idea of these guys were there when we made the music that I really love and remember, yeah, it wouldn't be the same without them.
So, that said, bring up a drummer. Granted, Portnoy was a big piece of that puzzle. He wrote a lot of the music.
Yep.
Mangini can just play the same licks.
That's the thing. You got people that can easily ape those sounds. Same with vocals, believe it or not. You can find people that sing like Jeff Pilsen or Michael Anthony.
But something like this, it would be pretty fucking cool to see the original lineup.
That's the thing. It would be cool. And that's the thing. For Dream Theater, I would.
But it
so
wouldn't
Dokken,
stop you.
It wouldn't freak out.
If it's Rudess and Mangini, it's not going to stop you seeing that tour.
No, not at all.
You're first in line.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, that's going to be good stuff.
I mean, it would be cool. I agree.
So
Killswitch comes back with Howard Jones.
I would be down with
we're
that.
We're going.
For sure.
Killswitch comes back with Jesse Lee.
I'm still going because they were great, too.
They're fucking amazing.
It was awesome to hear. You know, what it makes me... Let's go ahead and do the beer real quick, and then maybe
Jimmy.
We don't have to do a full one, but just sort of...
Yeah.
We've had this on the show before, and
but
it's just become...
It's different every year, right?
Well, every year they vary the recipe, I think, a little bit. It's Stone Brewery, which is, you know, always a classic. And this one, like I say, this is the current version, the current year, 2016. They usually do it, I think, around the summer, fall, late summer, fall. Anyway, this is the Woot Stout, and as you know, Woot Stout is a... collaboration between Greg Koch, Drew Curtis, and Will Wheaton, Uber Geek. And they do, at first I was a little skeptical of the collaboration, but when I tasted that first Woot, I think we had it on a show a long time ago, it was really great. And I think every year it comes out pretty good. This is the latest version, so, you know, typical nice dark, nice little lacing. Looks like your classic stout.
I think you got like a 4.
Oh, wow, I'm not surprised. Let's taste it. That's nice. See, the Woot Stout, man,
has
become
delicious.
A yearly treat.
Oh, fuck yeah, it is.
Yeah, and I don't know what makes it, if there's anything special that makes it a Woot Stout, you know what I mean, other than the guys are in it.
I think we have one in the cellar from last year. We never opened.
That's the thing. I mean, like I say, it's been coming out every year since they started, and they're really good. The deal is, let's read the deal. You've got Drew Curtis, Will Wheaton, and Greg Koch. Like we said, Will Wheaton is, you know, the geek's geek. He's been around forever. He's become a favorite amongst the nerdy crowd. So, and he's a home brewer. I've seen him on his. I used to read his Twitter, and he
was always doing some new sort of homebrew stuff. So I think he, because he lives in that area of the world over on the West Coast, he made friends with the dudes at Stone Brewery. They probably reached out to him and said, dude, you know, how would you like to do a collaboration? And wisely said, fuck yes. So we got Drew Curtis, who's from Fark.com. I don't know if you've heard that website, but it's one of those websites where they aggregate a bunch of shit together from all over the web and just, you know, they categorize it. It's one of the originals that used to do this. And so you could say, like, oh, I want to see funny pictures, or I want to see, you know, interesting videos, hilarious videos.
Yeah.
This guy at his website, Fark.com, would assemble all that shit, all the links in one spot. One of the originators, old stuff. Will Wheaton, like I say, actor and celebrity. And then Greg Koch, of course, is the CEO and co-founder of Stone Brewing. So,
now, who is Wheaton? What has he been in?
He was in Star Trek, The Next Generation. He was Wesley Crusher, the young dorky kid on that show. Yeah, if I show you a picture, you'll probably recognize him.
Was he the gay Spock?
The gay Spock. No, you'll see him. Here's a picture of him as Wesley Crusher.
Gay?
No.
The guy that played him was gay.
Here he is. Recognize? You weren't a big Star Trek fan.
No, I don't know him.
Star Trek Next Generation. He was also in here. You'll recognize him from.
Okay. Let me get this straight.
Because I'm sure you've seen this movie, Stand By Me. He was that kid. He was that kid.
Okay, real quick.
Just drop it.
Just calm yourself. So, dickhead, we gotta hit the switch. I'm sorry. So look, you dork.
Oh man, fucking god.
So let me just read real quick, and then we'll move on.
Let that go, could he?
No, of course not. This barrel-aged palate saver has been a favorite among our fans and us since its inception in 2013. Pecans, wheat, flaked rye, and bourbon-soaked barrels. Provide
pecans?
This,
I don't taste pecans.
Yeah, provide this whopping complex superhero version of an imperial stout with a profound complexity that makes it ideal for cellaring if you can wait that long. Now, we can't say this beer bestows Jedi powers exactly, but your taste buds may just be fooled into believing as much. A special thanks to Amanda Connor, who illustrated this year's label to support the Hero Initiative. Amanda Connor is awesome. She's a really great comic book artist, one of the few female comic book artists, and she's really good. So that's cool, too. That adds a little extra to it. And obviously, it's a charity, Hero Initiative, so they're trying to tie that in, too. If you want to look that up, you can look it up, heroinitiative.org. Anyway, the Woot Stout, like I said, it's always great. It's delicious. It's complex.
I love it.
It's fucking smells amazing. You got some nice roasted smells, some coffee, along with, you know, malty, chocolatey, toffee-ish kind of flavors, too.
That's a
heck of a good beer. So, anyway, you know, one of the things I want to touch on before we wrap all these things
up. Can I bring up one more band?
Of course you can. You will. What do you got?
Dick. Scorpions.
Okay.
So you got Herman Frank and Francis Buchholz.
I know. I have no idea who those people are.
They were the bass player and drummer in the Glory Days.
Okay.
Like Blackout, Love for Sting.
Rocky Like a Hurricane.
Yeah, they had a falling out with the guys.
Uh-huh.
And now Mickey D's on drums. Fucking awesome.
Nice.
And bass player, I don't know the guy.
Exactly.
Let's just call him John Schwartz.
All right. John Schwartz.
Are you clamoring for Herman Frank and Francis Buchholz?
Yeah, I wouldn't know if they jumped in and out in one show.
I can deal with it.
Right.
And not really care.
Exactly. And to me, a lot of bands are like that.
Well, yeah, if the bass player didn't add something special or the drummer, then it's not as big a deal.
Right. And I know. When I say this, just in your mind, separate the vocal shit.
Sure.
And that's why I say, if you replaced, and they have at times, if you replace people like Michael Anthony in Van Halen, or even replace a drummer, they never have, but if you did that, who would know the fucking difference? I don't think you would.
A casual fan wouldn't.
Right. You just listen to it and you go, sounds like drums to me.
Yeah. I mean, well, look at Kiss. They're the perfect example.
Oh, yeah.
They've been able to go on with... It's not working so well anymore. I heard ticket sales are way down.
Because I think they're tired of them milking the fuck out of it. It's like, how many reunion tours have you done now? How many? This is the last time? Yeah, exactly. So
it's time to shut her down. So, I'm sorry. What's your point? What did you want to bring up?
I wanted to bring up a secondary topic that you kind of touched on, which is an interesting thing. It might merit a full-blown topic of another show since we waited this long. But the idea is...
people who are, and I say this because you're one of these people, and that is people who are raising a young child and raising them in the metal ways. I'm wondering what sort of unique challenges exist in doing that. Is there like a limit? Like, I'll show them all of this stuff, but this part of metal I'm not going to show them. I'd rather they not see this. That kind of thing. Do you have limits? And also, too, do they ever, you know, is it ever a struggle? Like, if, for instance, you try to show them some metal and they just said, I'm sorry, Dad, that sucks. I'm into Lady Gaga or whatever, or Taylor Swift, and I don't want to hear your metal bullshit. Would you be upset about it? Would you try to force it a little more? Or would you, you know, would you just say, you know what? You have a right to listen to whatever you want and be totally cool with it, but, you know, obviously be secretly sort of disappointed. Mm-hmm. You know, how does it work? What do you really, is it really more about, I really feel I need to pass this on to somebody, or is it, I like that this person already likes it, and so I'm happy to share more with them, and that's a nice little connection. You're going to have a connection anyway, they're your kid, but you know what I mean? Having that extra connection is kind of cool, that music part of it.
Right.
And that sort of thing. I'm interested in that sort of vibe. And like I say, you are personally involved in it. Yeah. So you're the closest person to talk to. But I'm betting that some people, I bet there's people that where that relationship is very rich and rewarding. Mm-hmm. I bet there's other people where they tried and it's been very disappointing. Not like I'm going to disown you because you don't like metal, but just...
I have a great example.
I figured.
Yeah, yeah. I'll tell you where I'm at, and I'll tell you one of my closest friends,
mm-hmm.
Where he's at with his son.
All right.
Mine is an interesting dynamic because sometimes you wonder if the child is trying harder to like what daddy likes because they want a bond.
So there can be a bond? Right, exactly.
And then another part is I really dig it, you know?
Yeah, so why wouldn't you? Yeah.
With the metal munchkin, I think generally she does like a lot of the music I present to her. There's some stuff that she says I don't care for.
Yeah.
And
respectfully, you know, thing.
Does it deter me and make me push it harder? No. Actually, she's not a big fan of Killswitch.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I
remember you told me that she dug, when we saw the Killthrax tour, she dug Anthrax, really wasn't into the Killswitch. Huh?
Yeah.
I looked back there a couple times and she was kind of sitting there like I can't wait for this to be over. Right, yeah, right. I was like, oh, I kind of felt bad for her.
Well, I think she was tired. She wasn't feeling great either.
Oh, all right.
But there's other bands. I mean, she loves Enough's Enough. I think a part of it's like, does she like him because she met Chips Enough and he was super nice to her?
And that's the
Or is it the music?
And it's hard to separate that because it's all sort of happening organically. And that is, it is kind of neat. It's not like you're, you know, I don't know, Kurt Loder or somebody who's really into the music business, mm-hmm. or Eddie Trunk or whatever, where you would really be connected to parts of the business no one else would have access to on a real personal level. Like, imagine going with your dad and say your dad's Eddie Trunk and you go to Mike Portnoy's house one weekend, you know, and be like, how fucking cool is that? Mm-hmm. As opposed to you, where you're not like friends with Chips Enough, but mm-hmm. you do get to meet him and have the interview with him as part of our show, and that's kind of cool. It's what the average person doesn't get to do.
Right.
So it adds a little bit to it. So I bet that part is cool. But, like I say, I'm sure she's not fooled into thinking, well, you know, my daddy knows everybody. I don't know, who knows? And I bet to some extent if that does seem to show in her eyes or something, it kind of feels like, I'm kind of cool. You know what I mean? I'm sure that's a big part of it.
I'll tell you something funny. About a year ago, if somebody came on satellite radio on Hair Nation or Ozzy's Boneyard or even Octane, I was like, oh, hey, I interviewed that guy. Oh, wow, that's so cool. Or on the iPod, that's so cool. Now it's like... Yeah, I know, Dad. You're just bragging. I was like, yeah, maybe I'm bragging. I guess I didn't impress you anymore. Again, like you said, it's not like I'm buddies with these guys.
Yeah.
A few of these guys I could say, okay, I could be friendly with them. I could call them or whatever.
Like Tracy G or something.
Tracy G's the prime example. That's probably our best friend of the show. Pete L'Esperance, I would say he's a pretty friendly guy with us.
Or Eric Martin or somebody, right.
Paul Shortino, Dave Henserling. I mean, we've got our handful of guys that are good to us, and we call. They're always willing to talk. It's awesome. But back to the question on the music part, she's pretty honest. She's a very musical kid, and she's very versatile in her music taste.
I was going to say, I don't doubt that she likes more stuff than just metal. I'm sure that's just one aspect of the stuff she enjoys.
Well, she told me, she goes, I don't really like pop that much anymore. She goes, I like classic rock, hard rock, and heavy metal.
That's cool.
And I like 50s music. I like a little bit of country.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, I do like some pop stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But when her friends ask her what she likes, she's like more pop geared stuff. Towards hard rock and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, enough's enough. For what they're like, who the fuck's that? You know?
Yeah.
So, or she's going to a show, they say, who are you going to go see? She's like, well, I'm going to see Robin Trower next Friday. It's like, who?
You're like, shut up.
And a lot of people are like, you're going to Robin who?
Yeah, I would bet a lot of her peers just hear that and go, what are you even talking about? Sounds exactly. like a foreign language.
Or if she's going to Evergreen, you know, with us, and they're gonna, she's like, who? So, but yeah, she says that. And if I play her Dibby Borg or something like that, I don't think the kid's really going to dig it. She does not like Cradle of Filth. She's not a big fan of that.
The kind of horror music.
I'll tell you something. I'm a very lucky father in that either a bonding thing or I think she really generally enjoys the music as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a win-win for me. I mean, we'll get in the car and we'll get on my iPod and she'll start picking songs. So, for instance, last night I picked some Killswitch, Heaven's Basement, and then she picked Evergrey and Queen. So we picked two songs of each to play in the car on the ride home.
That's right, because is she going to that show or just wants to go? To the show? Queen with Adam Lambert?
She wants to go, but I'm on the fence. I don't know if I want to see that.
Yeah, I remember she asked me about it, and I was just like, you know, I love Queen.
Yeah.
And it's not like I don't have any... thing against Adam Lambert.
Right.
It's, you know, if he wants to have a career and go sing, whatever. I don't care. My thing is, whoever it's going to be has big shoes to fill. And it's not that Adam's new or that he's gay. I don't care about any of that stuff. Like I said,
so
for me,
Frank.
It
Who
is.
Cares?
Yeah, for me, it's this is the sound of that band. And it's so iconic. I mean, Freddie Mercury is Queen. And yeah, they're not all going to live forever. And it doesn't mean the band has to end necessarily. Yeah. But if you're going to have someone in there singing that song, you got big shoes to fill, dude. You got a lot of notes you got to hit. And I'm not saying you're going to be able to hit them all. That's fine. And I don't want some guy who can just imitate them. That's your whole problem with Journey, right?
Yeah. And that's why I was about to bring Journey up. It's like, right. I won't go see Journey unless Steve Perry's front of the band.
Right. And that's fine.
And I don't care if he can hit the notes. I want to see Steve Perry singing.
Right. It's a thing. And that's, I guess that's my thing with Queen. It's like, if it's not Freddie, I don't know what's the point. And you're right. You're like, well, how can we do it without Freddie? It's like, maybe you can't. Maybe you just should not play anymore.
It's a little different dynamic because Freddie's passed away.
Right. Oh, I see what you mean.
This is
Steve
the only way you can see Queen. Journey, Steve's still alive and kicking. Whether he can sing,
and I think, you
know,
at some point they may do something, as cheesy as it is to bring it up. But, you know, at some point they may end up doing something for the heck of it someday, have a concert where they do a hologram Freddie Mercury or something. And everybody else is there, Deacon and whoever else, and
they're
May and all
those
guys. They're
doing it with Dio right now.
Yeah, and if they do that, I'm like, I guess I can't stop y'all. And if it sounds...
You want
any more? No, I'm good. And if it sounds good, you know, more power to you. But, you know, I guess I would feel more like, I wonder if the band is into it. You know, I could see the band going, why do I want to sit here? And it's like lip syncing to something that's not there.
That's
it's
a
weird.
Whole other show in itself.
I right.
Mean, you know, do you really want to go see a hologram of, you
yeah.
know... Okay, let's go see Jimi Hendrix hologram or
now me, I'm
something
a,
like that. You know?
Now, me, I'm a tech guy. I've got total techno lust. I like whenever there's some new gadget or some new technology, I'm fascinated by it. I always have been. I'm one of those guys. And so I'm fascinated by the technology of it. But by the same token, I'm also a music fan. And I respect the original sound and sort of feel of all that stuff. And it's like that's kind of weird and soulless to have this sort of machine standing in for a guy, some brilliant artist that used
sure.
to exist. And so that's to weird. So I'd be kind of fascinated and put off by it at the same time.
I look at it, and maybe I'm looking at it wrong, or maybe just the purist that I am, mm-hmm. is I just look at it as a money-grabbing opportunity. You're cashing in on a guy that's no longer with us. Do I really want to see that? I don't know. I saw the real thing. I have video of the real thing.
Yeah.
If I want to see it, I'll put in a DVD.
And I think that's the way I ultimately feel about it. It's like, you know what? I've got a hologram, and it's called a Blu-ray, you know, version of the concert. That's as close as I need to be. And I'll put it on my big screen with my surround sound, and that's as realistic as I need to be. I don't need to actually be in the place physically, have the band here physically, except for that guy, and he's replaced by hologram.
Yeah.
That's not all that better than if I just had a really great high-fidelity version of one of their best concerts ever that I can put on my giant screen at home and watch.
Do I want to see the Dio Disciples backing a hologram of Dio?
Yeah, it's just not it's really. Kind of bizarre.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm fascinated by the technology, but I don't know that I need... And that's not going to substitute for me the real thing.
It's a money-grabbing opportunity, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was going to say, obviously they're making money off it, and some people may go just because of the novelty of it. So in that sense, it's purely making money off the novelty of it. But, you know, obviously I think those guys like Freddie Mercury, there's some estate of Freddie Mercury, and they... I would assume legally have the sort of final say over whether people can use that image in an hologram or whatever. So in other words, they can't do it unless somebody said, we think it's okay. And presumably those people have things like that in mind. Like, does this really fill the spirit of the person? Is that, does it feel like a empty cash grab, you know, a soulless cash grab, you know, and they will sort of prevent that from happening. One would hope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you know, there's greedy people out there too who just want money.
Well, you know, there's people that bag on. He's gone right now, so he won't chime in. But Eddie Trunk bags on Steel Panthers being the novelty act. But if you look at this band, these guys are all talented musicians, and they're not covering. Tracks from the 80s.
It's more like a parody. It's more like a parody band.
But they're writing original music.
Yeah.
It's comedy metal or hard rock or whatever you want to call it.
Like Tenacious D or something.
Exactly. I would much rather see something like that than a hologram of Dio or a hologram of Freddie Mercury or whomever, you know? Bringing up Steel Panther, they got a brand new record called Lower the Bar. Why don't we play something off that?
All right.
How about we go with Pussy Ain't Free.
All right.
Back to our topic here. It's what evolved into another topic, and I'm glad you brought it up, was, I mean, I think it's just, and I don't want to get political, I don't want to get religious here, but it's just, to me, like some of these TV churches, I think they're all about just grabbing money, and it's not about religion.
Mm.
And these artists that are doing this, I think they can't make it on their own. So... they're grasping on to somebody's legacy to be able to profit against it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I know. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's the way I feel about it. There's no way I would buy a ticket to go see something like that. And I don't think it's... I mean, on the techie side, yeah, I'd probably watch a video of it and say, oh, that's kind of cool. But it's not something I'd pay to go see.
Right. And, what are you going to do? I guess... we have no say in it. If they're going to do it, they're going to do it. Obviously, Queen and Adam Lambert are touring. Sure. It's going to happen. And, more power to them. That's fine. I'm just not interested in myself personally. That's all. I'm not trying to dog him about it.
Can he do the Freddie Mercury stuff?
That's what I find hard to believe. I'm sure he's a fine singer.
Have you seen videos or no?
No, I have no idea. But I know that he was on American Idol or whatever, and he won or at least was a finalist or something. So I know he must have some talent.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, you know, there was only one Freddie Mercury.
Right.
You know, what are the chances someone else can do that too? I mean, maybe there is.
Well, let me ask you this. This would be a good kind of question. Zeppelin. Okay, Robert Plant doesn't want to do Zeppelin.
Right.
So, say there were several people trying out for the position.
Mm-hmm.
So it was John Paul Jones, Jimmy Page, and Jason Bonham.
Oh, I see. As the
vocalist. Who's the vocalist you'd want to see? Miles Kennedy? Alter Bridge? Steven Tyler? Sammy Hagar?
Maybe Miles Kennedy.
I mean, would you pay to go see that? I think I would.
No.
Just to see Page. I've never seen Page live. That would be good.
I would like to see Page live.
It would be more for... Well, I love Miles Kennedy, too. So, I mean, it's a win-win for me.
And I see where some people's dilemma is, when am I ever... Same with Queen. When am I ever going to see
most
of the band there ever together?
I would love to see Brian May.
Yeah, Brian May is one of my favorite old school
John
guitarists.
John Deacon...
He seems like a cool guy, and Homeboy on the drums. They all seem like nice people.
Well, Homeboy on the drums is the one that sings a lot of the harmonies.
Right, and he's got that crazy high voice and those really high harmonies. And that's fine. My thing is, like, you know, it would be cool to see him, and like I was just saying.
It's just for Brian May, for me.
Yeah, really. And like I was saying, it's like, when am I ever going to see three-fourths of Queen together? I've never seen Queen ever. I certainly never saw him with Freddie, and this is the closest I'll ever get to seeing
that.
But like I said... I feel like I don't want to taint that with an inferior, you know, version.
And there are live videos where you could see Freddie.
Yeah, just get
the
DVDs and enjoy those, because those are classic, dude. I mean, Freddie was amazing.
Oh, he was. I guess same thing with Zeppelin, though.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
I mean, that's one of those things with what we're talking about, this reunited or not reunited. I guess somewhat reunited with Page and John Paul Jones.
Right.
With Jason Bonham. Right. Jason Bonham, that's his Jason Bonham experience. That show I was telling you that I had tickets for Foreigner and Cheap Trick, Jason Bonham's opening up with the Jason Bonham experience.
Oh, wow.
Which I thought would be kind of cool to see, too.
Sure. I mean, I don't know him to be any amazing, you know.
Oh, he's like a great drummer.
And to me, again, unless you're Neil Peart or Mike Portnoy or somebody, you know, it's like,
what about John Bonham's stuff you did with Zeppelin?
That was Moby sounded Dick. Like drumming. I mean,
Moby Dick?
Sounded like drumming to me. It didn't sound particularly...
He was a good drummer.
Okay, fair enough.
Keith Moon?
Again, sounds like drumming to me.
He's a great drummer.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, he wasn't Neil Peart level.
No.
So what do you mean, good drummer? He didn't make mistakes.
They were innovative. I mean, if you go to a Portnoy, I bet you would say Keith Moon.
Well, yeah, all those guys are going to say
John
that.
John Bonham
but it's like,
were probably an influence.
They say that, but it's like you can still play the rings around those people.
You can't put those guys in the category of like a Ringo Starr.
Ringo's that. I mean, that's the thing. I honestly don't know. If put it this way, if you just said, you know, put these headphones on, I'm going to just play these different people playing drums. I don't mean any song that you know. Just playing drums, like noodling.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, who are they? I wouldn't know. And I may not even know, be able to pick Mike Portnoy out of that group if he had like a really... Neil Peart, I might be able to tell. Stuart Copeland, people with a very distinct kind of sound, I might be able to tell. But from those old school, anything past the 80s, like 70s and 60s, all that drumming literally sounded the same to me.
You know, I heard an interesting interview with Sting, and he was just talking about the early days of the Police and stuff, and how he and Stewart were mainly like jazz musicians.
Yeah.
And then they got into this rock thing and decided to form, you know, a three-piece rock band.
Mm-hmm.
And then they found Andy Summers, right?
Yeah.
So,
and the Police, I think, just doesn't get enough credit for the amazing music they wrote.
But
they wrote some amazing music.
Apparently, Sting wrote everything.
Well, yeah. I mean, he'd come up. But, I mean, as far as, like, Andy Summers was the texture master.
Right.
You know, he would just come up with, like, these amazing layers of guitars and these effects and just do this amazing shit like an artist. And Stu the same way, like, all over those little cymbals and shit he liked to play. But, yeah, obviously the melody, the lyrics, you know, the gist of the song was Sting. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm totally down with that. But my thing is, it's like, unless you're that level where this really unique sound, it's like find me the drummer who played the drummer on a... Love Potion Number 9, you know, or something like that. It's just generic drumming.
Sure.
To me, all that drumming sounds that way. Even Led Zeppelin, all that drumming sounds the same to me. I'm not impressed with it. It may be unpopular to hear, but I'm not impressed with it.
I would battle you a little bit on Zeppelin.
Okay. I mean, what I've heard about John Bonham is he beat the fuck out of the drums. And I'm like, okay, he hit him extra hard. So what?
That's like saying I plucked my strings extra hard on the guitar.
I would say
so
Bonham
what?
And Keith Moon out of those two bands, out of the Who. And I mean, Charlie Watts, you're okay. Who cares, you know?
I mean, what's the difference between Bonham and Watts? I don't know the difference.
But Bonham and Moon, I would give you a little bit of contention there. That they did some pretty cool shit in their career.
Fair enough. I'd love to hear some examples. I mean, it's not that I'm saying you're full of shit or you're wrong. I'm saying I don't hear it. That's all I'm saying.
Sure.
So I'd love for someone, like maybe I'll look up YouTube and maybe there'll be some example video going, this is why they say they're awesome.
Yeah.
Here's the example.
I mean, we got some video we could put in at some point.
We'll have to see that. That would be good.
We'll
if you've got
that.
Some
yeah.
live video, I'd really love to see that.
Sure.
Because I've never seen it.
But, yeah, I mean, if you look at classic band, Charlie Watts. What about, here you go. We getting close on time?
Oh, yeah. We were like 1:15.
Bill Ward. Sabbath.
Right.
He did some cool shit.
Same with him. He said to you about like Geezer Butler
put,
with Sabbath. I'm like, what? It's bass.
Put Vinny Appice in there. I like Vinny's drumming.
I love Vinny. I mean, you think he's a cool guy, but if you said pick Vinny out of this lineup of drummers, I wouldn't know the difference.
What about Carmine?
All that sounds generic to me. They're good. I don't doubt that they're good.
You just like the more.
I love people that. I like people. Yeah, I guess progressive. Where I'm saying you can tell my sound. If you were listening to a bunch of guitar playing, and someone said, "Which of these guitarists is George Lynch?"
It's totally different.
You'd know.
Yeah.
You'd know, wouldn't you?
I know. I would.
There's
know.
No fucking question. I don't. And I can say that about certain drummers. If you say, "Which one of these is Stuart Copeland?" I'd be like, "Oh, it's that guy." But if you said, "Which one of these is John Bonham?" I wouldn't fucking be able to tell you. I really wouldn't. And by this I say, to be fair, everyone, so put Mike Portnoy, Paul Craddock, Vinny Appice, and John Bonham, and they're all playing the same notes.
Okay.
What's the fucking difference? I wouldn't know who was who.
Okay, here's an example. Ricky Rocket, Tommy Lee.
Uh-huh.
What was that guy?
Bunch of mediocre drummers.
Steve, what the fuck's his name? The dude, he was in Wasp and... L.A. Guns, and I forget this last name. That guy, Steve.
Okay.
Steve.
And say, Terry Bozzio. Now, of those four, I think supposed to be the most amazing drummer is supposed to be Terry Bozzio.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be a bad motherfucker. And I remember when I listened to Blacklight Symphony or Blacklight something. It was that band of Terry Bozzio, Tony Levin, and Steve Stevens. I got a couple of those albums. They were great. And Terry was doing all this weird, like, funky shit. And I'm like, okay, that's interesting. I'm not saying that that means it's harder than anything anyone else plays.
Yeah.
But it's unique and it's interesting. Whereas the other people just kind of go, like,
sure.
The Partridge Family or something. It's like, I can't tell that drumming from anybody else's. And as far as I know, that's what Dahl John Bonham did. It's just that when he played it, he just, instead of hitting like that, he went... I'm like, well, so fucking what? That doesn't make you better than anybody else. You just hit it harder, so what?
He was the first to really play the drums hard.
To play them hard. Okay, I mean, but who cares?
Well, I mean,
I don't get
that. Moby Dick solo. And
Moby Dick's a great song, but what makes it great is the guitar and the singing.
There was a thing about that.
Okay, fair enough. I mean,
I'm just telling you.
That's the thing. I don't know any better. I'm just explaining why I don't get it.
I'm just telling you there was a thing.
And I was like, you dick? But yeah, for whatever it's worth, that'll be an interesting show as a follow-up.
Sure.
Let's have maybe a follow-up show where we devote it to the drumming, where you just say, look, here's why Bonham's a bad motherfucker.
I would tell you, back in the day, usually a drum solo is when I go to the can.
Right, that's the thing. You're not a huge drum guy.
Eric Carr, when he was alive with Kiss,
mm-hmm.
he had a great drum solo.
Okay.
Tommy Lee's drum solos...
His was more spectacle, right? Look at this. I'm on a fucking drum track. I'm upside down. I'm in my underwear. Whatever.
Neil Peart, hands down.
Everyone knows.
Awesome.
See, that's
Portnoy,
the thing. You don't question why he's called
Portnoy's
great.
Portnoy's awesome.
Yeah.
But other than that...
And even Mike Mangini. I remember back in the day, I saw him with Vi, and he did like a drum roll, like da-da-da-da-da-da, one-handed. He went da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and I was like, holy fuck, that skill. I bet John Bonham can't fucking do that. Or his son. In their prime. I don't think
J-Dog?
They could do it. J-Dog. He's just J-Dog from the block. No, you know what I'm saying? And I'm not, like I said, please don't get me wrong, listeners. I'm not trying to rag these people and say they suck.
You are.
I'm saying I don't understand what the big deal is. So I am willing to be educated on this. So
I follow.
That's everybody's job. Educate me. I'm waiting.
I'm trying to think.
You're too busy jamming to the Killswitch.
I can't get over
them. They're awesome.
Oh, look at the drummer, dude. He's got short hair and no beard, Holmes.
You're like, my shirt is useless now. I can't do it.
And Mike's hair is like nothing. He's like, I'll just get out of school.
And Adam's in a tree.
He doesn't have a cape, though, Holmes.
I know, he can't fly, Holmes. My powers are diminished.
Fucking you gotta love the Killswitch.
Oh, yeah. They're
perfect
fantastic.
Mix of melody.
See, now he's acting a little more normal in the video. Fucking Adam tricking us. We had no idea what to expect until you saw him in concert.
And
what
Howard
the fuck?
Sweat like a motherfucker.
I know. Well, look at him, dude. He's a big motherfucker, dude.
Dude, he would whoop ass.
He looks like a bad motherfucker. We need to go back and revisit that topic where we just said, if you were in a fight, what band do you want on your side to be fighting? Because who would whoop what other band's ass?
I like that.
Like back in the day, I think Lemmy would have kicked some fucking ass. In his prime. We assume prime, in their prime. Howard Jones looks like a bad motherfucker who would whoop some ass.
Yeah, I'd take Howard. Howard would be on my team. And I'd take Adam because Adam's just fucking crazy.
He would go nuts. He'd be like that monkey-style fighting motherfucker. Like, woo!
He'd be like somebody else. One flew over the cuckoo's nest. You know?
He's freaking people out.
No shit. Well, cool, man. I think we've exhausted our time.
I think we have. We've goofed around for a while, and we had fun.
I had a lot of fun tonight. So hope you guys have enjoyed this as much as I have, because I really got into this. I think I got a little chub.
Semi-chub.
I tell you what, let's get to the classics, Mr. G. Pull one out of my arse.
The best kind of music comes from your ass.
Good luck finding this.
Mixer.
No, actually, I ordered this, and it took a little while. I got it, though. There's a band. Shit, I don't even know when this came out. Probably early 90s. Just a one-off band out of nowhere.
Jerk
no
offs.
One's probably ever heard of them again. Named after a police song, as far as I know.
Okay.
They're called Roxanne.
Nice.
And, actually, I usually pull out the... I have this on vinyl. I usually pull this out every Christmas on Rapid Presents. I listen to vinyl. I don't know why.
You just do a little wow, wow, wow.
Yeah, I do my... I put on my old DJ hat.
A little scratching.
Oh, fuck yeah.
You're crazy.
Here's a song. The self-titled and only titled debut. An only album ever called Nothing to Lose. Pretty cool. Check it out.
No other care.
Nice. Not thrilling, but nice.
Nice.
No, seriously, though, in keeping with our what we talked about, we mentioned Queen.
Yeah.
How about a cover of Queen? A good cover.
Sure.
How about Lynch Mob's cover of Tie Your Mother Down?
Pick of the week.
My pick of the week is Fallujah. You know, we saw them with the Devin Townsend Project.
They were awesome, man.
And Between the Buried and Me, they were awesome.
Totally.
That was a killer tour last year. And they're a nice extreme metal band from San Francisco. And their latest album was called, I think it's Dreamless. And I'm going to go with The Void Alone.
That band, the band, we were both very impressed.
We were tripping, dude. Yeah. That whole night, because we dig that, and then the Between the Buried and Me were awesome. Yes, they had their own sound. It was each band had its own unique sound, and it was great.
And Devin was
and
amazing.
Devin was just amazing. Yeah, it just got better each band.
Oh, really did.
So it worked out really nice. That was a killer tour.
I agree.
What do you got over there, Paisan?
I wanted to pull something out. It came out last year, but was really digging on it today. Zodiac. And I've dug these guys before. Man, they do the best cover of the ZZ Top song. And,
is that the name of it? You fucking goof.
Hey, Baby Burps. Blue Jean Blues.
Ah, yes.
Fucking killer.
I think you've actually played them before on the show, but it's such a great fucking cover.
Yeah, I think that album's A Bit of Devil or something like that, with the chick on the cover. Their latest record's called Grain of Soul. And, man, a lot of really good songs on this record. But tell you what, I want to go with Down. I could go with Get Out, too. No, I'll go with Down.
You're going down. Down.
I'm going Rage. Here's Down by Zodiac. Check it out. So, yeah. Of course, as always, a great show by us.
If I do say so myself, we're awesome.
We forgot something, man.
What'd you forget?
Hey, guys.
Yeah.
I know the show's up, but you forgot the green room.
We're cool with that.
Can he just come back?
Yeah, we can bump him. So it's decided. He's bumped.
It's love.
Hey, Lars, what's happening, man?
Oh, shit.
Choco. You guys are fucking Metallica again. Totally used to it.
Yeah, but you just suck. I mean, you were cool. You were really good about 30 years ago.
Not 30.
Hey, John, just get the mic from him.
I got it.
We're trying to end the show here, so just give him his retainer fee, and we'll do it another time.
Right, give him his royalty check, and he's gone.
Yep, there's a couple publishers' clearinghouse checks in the drawer.
Just tear one off the top.
Already, Genghis and I both like endorsed
them. They're rubber
them.
Stamped already. Yeah.
Okay, I thought that was two of my bonus.
No, we got a bonus for you. So
don't. I see you trying to stick that shit in your pocket. Yeah. Leave it
give
where
him
you found
10K
it.
10K and. Give him a couple cookies, those cookies with the Oreos you licked off the icing.
Right. And tell you what, for your trouble, if you do that, you can have that top one for 100 million pesos. Take that one.
You guys should go up.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you.
Love you guys.
I know you love you.
Cool.
I can't believe I kept a straight face that long.
So well...
You're all about it. I'm telling you.
I'm ready to see Killswitch. I want to go. I want to be like a Grateful Dead follower to see Killswitch.
Just to Killswitch.
Oh, dude, I love Killswitch.
Or like Fish. Or like, we just follow Killswitch around.
No shit.
Just to hear that one song and then we leave.
Yeah, we leave. We're done. Anyway, guys, I hope you enjoyed the show. I had a lot of fun with our topics tonight. I hope you guys enjoyed our banter.
Yep.
And I hope you enjoy the interview coming your way, man. And we want to give you two big
horns up.
This is Marius from Night Rage, and you're listening to the Jenkins and Ragman show, Horns Up.
From Night Rage. Give it up, people. Orioles, how you doing tonight?
I'm fine, man. You know, I'm glad to talk to you about the new album, The Venomous. We're pretty excited here, you know, and we are glad that people, you know, got really good feedback from the press, and the fans liked the album a lot. A lot of people saying that this is actually one of the best albums we have released, and comparing to the first album, Sweet Vengeance, stuff like that. So it's a pretty good time for us, and also the fact that the lineup is complete now, and we have we're a five-piece band. That makes us feel even more stronger that we came back, strong, and we have a lot to offer still with this melodic death metal style we're playing so many years.
I agree, man. This is a solid, solid record, and Ronnie is a vocalist on his second outing here. Really, man, the guy's got really good vocals, and I know in the past you've had some guest vocalists like Tom England and Tomas Lindberg, but this one it's all Ronnie, and man, he does a hell of a job.
Yeah, he's awesome. I mean, that's the second album we're doing with Ronnie after the Puritan. I think he built more confidence in the band right now, and we're also very good friends, very good. We're like blood brothers, and that makes us a more solid unit, and actually, to be honest with you, you can really hear that on the album, that he worked more in his vocals, and he's more sure about himself. He, in a way, he found his style, the style that he wanted to, sing all these lines, and because he's coming from the hardcore scene mainly, and I think the work he did for the Venomous is more the tones and the voice that he wanted to portray on the album, and I think he managed to make it even better this time. So we're really happy with him.
I agree, man. Well, just to get started here, how would you compare the Venomous to the Puritan? And what's the main difference between the two records?
Well, the Puritan for us was a really hard album to record because we were only me and Ronnie trying to, make the album, writing the album together. We had a lot of issues to face, but the Venomous, I think it's more well prepared album. You can also hear that it's more well thought, well written album. It was me and Magnus actually wrote all the songs on the me and our new guitar player Magnus. We wrote all the songs together, and we had a really good time. Never been a struggle for us. I don't know. I mean, it's everything sounds like it's on the right direction with the Venomous. See, the songs, the sound we get, the artwork, everything. I mean, it's more compact. It's more on the right direction for us, I think. I feel.
I agree. And I got to say, and like a lot of the reviewers are saying, this could be your strongest record. I mean, the riffs, the melodies. They're just awesome, and they're infectious. They get in your head. You're just like, I don't know. There's parts you're thrashing, and then it's a slow thing, and you go to a clean guitar, and you have a lot of variety on the record, and it's really, really strong. When you go to sit down and do a record, you said that you and Magnus wrote most of the record together. Magnus is, in the band, about a year or so. What's the process like? Do you guys just riff off each other and throw ideas at one another, or do you come in a little bit more of a finished idea and then you kind of work off that?
Well, it happened that I started some initial ideas for some songs, but then we took those songs and we rewrote them in a way. But a lot of songs, actually other songs, we write from scratch. It was only about jamming, like throwing ideas to each other, stuff like that, sitting down in a room and just writing naturally, never been a problem for us anyways. There's a lot of ideas, and I think Magnus, he has a lot of ideas. He's on the same page like me, musically speaking. Like I think he's on the same page, and our ideas getting along. There's no egoism as well. I mean, it's all about who has the best riff. And And for me, I'm really open to work with other people when it comes to music, because I feel you get better results like that. You get better, stronger songs, like instead of just sitting me on and writing all this stuff by myself. I think it's much better when you have to work with somebody else, and you can actually hear that on the album. You can actually hear a lot of different ideas that comes from Magnus. And but still, we have the Nitrate signature sound in them anyways. It's never been a problem for us. So it's I'm very happy with the outcome of this album, the Venomous.
Well, I wanted to jump into the album here and discuss a couple of tracks with you. One of the first ones that really captured my ear was Disturbia. Do you have a cool story of how that song came together?
Well, it's a very one of the, you know, different songs in the album, I think, Disturbia. It came from mainly from jamming between me and Magnus. Also, I wanted to say that Ronnie helped a lot on, because he's very good also writing lyrics and vocal melodies, but he's also good to helping us with arrangements. So it was, he's also the guy that, we're the core in the band anyway, so we always write songs together, you know, as a team, it's a team effort in the band. So that's how the Disturbia song came about, you know, from jamming and from, you know, exchanging ideas between each other.
Well, let me ask you, the Venomous, the title, is there any sort of concept or underlying theme for the a lyrical point of the record?
Well, yeah, I mean, the Venomous talks about us, human beings. It's a concept album, lyrically speaking. It talks about us, humans, that the bad things we're doing to each other. And whether that is wars or bloodshed between, you know, towards innocent people or hatred, racism, all that stuff that is happening in the world right now. I mean, just look at around yourself, you know, like around you. It's a lot of bad stuff happening. And it seems that we never learn from our own mistakes and we keep going in the wrong direction. And for us, we get a little bit, I wouldn't say inspired, but we get affected maybe by that, and we want to write something about it. And also, we, you know, putting out some questions, not like preachers or something like that, but we just want to know why we are doing things like that, and also we are searching for the fact that maybe there is a hope, and there is time for change, and we hope actually that people will, you know, change to something better, and they will do better things to each other instead of killing each other to try to love each other. And so this is the kind of the main ideas for the Venomous, you know, and all the songs are going on the same kind of thinking, like I said.
Well, it's pretty interesting to have a good kind of message there, and it's a death metal record, you know, style wise. Very cool, man. Very cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think with the music we were playing with Nitrate, it fits in a way to talk about stuff like that. I mean, of course, maybe the fact is that when you play this death metal type of music, whatever it is, or melodic death metal, or brutal death metal, you have bands that are trying to talk about blood and about fantasy and all that stuff. But we try to base our lyrics more in human and more in the real stories. You know, things that can happen to everybody or things that happen in the world. And I think that makes us you know, kind of inspired to write about it. And I think, like I said, it fits. I think in a way it fits with the music we are playing, which is kind of a paradox because the music we're playing has a lot of melody and it has a lot of brutality, and that's the world we're living in. It's like black and white. It's a lot of bad stuff is happening, and also a lot of good stuff also is happening. So it's a good mixture, I think, for our kind of music.
I agree, man. I agree. And I've been a fan of melodic death metal for a long time, and you guys hit all the keynotes, especially this new record. I mean, it's written so well. I want to bring up another track, Affliction. And that one's more of a mid-tempo. It's not, you know, a real fast track, but mid-tempo, just heavy, a really cool, heavy groove to it. Do you have a cool story about how that song came together for you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this is a little bit different from the, you know, musical musical mayhem that we are well known for. You know, we're well known for playing very fast and thrashy riffs and all that stuff. But this time we wanted to incorporate a little bit more melody and more groove on the song. And I think that came mainly from Magnus. Was the initial idea for Affliction. And then we put some acoustic guitars and all that stuff. And still, I think for me, it's really heavy. Even though the song is a bit, like you said, mid-tempo or lighter, let's say, for a Nitrates album. But I think it has the elements that what a Nitrates song is. And that is heaviness, aggressiveness, groovy, you know, rhythms and also melodies. And I think we try to, you know, write a good song in the end of the day. You know, it's not only about playing fast or playing slower. It's that, for us, it's all about trying to write a good song. You know, so that's the idea for Affliction came about.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. The key to good songwriting is, like you said, let's write a good song. It doesn't have to be a million miles an hour. You know, it's just got to be heavy, it's got to be melodic, it's got to be Night Rage. And that's where Affliction fit for me. And, you know, I like the real fast stuff, heavy, thrashier stuff, but I always like a good mid-tempo, just heavy, as long as there's a good groove and melody. As long as you get that melody mixed in there, man, I'm fucking sold in a heartbeat, man. And definitely you guys achieved that with Affliction. That's definitely a close second to my favorite song, Disturbia, at the moment.
Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. I mean, I'm glad you liked the album and the songs. Yeah, for us, I mean, like you said, it's not only about playing one very, very fast all the time. I mean, it's, sometimes playing this mid-tempo kind of songs can make the whole thing even heavier, you know, because you concentrate more on the groove, you know.
right,
and the feeling for the song. So it's so we hope we can write songs like that in the future as well, like more songs in that direction of actually like Affliction.
Well, I want to bring up, I'm going to bring up a faster track in, I don't, I hope I do this right, in Abhorrence.
I think in Abhorrence, right. Yes. Yeah, in Abhorrence. Yes.
That's another really cool track. That one's definitely more up-tempo and heavier and in your face, and a very, another really cool track for you, man.
Yeah, it's more in the thrash, melodic thrash metal, you know, kind of new style, I think. Yeah, and it has a lot of melody too. I mean, yeah, for us, it's, like I said, it's all about writing good songs. We don't really care if it's fast or slow or whatever it is. It's all about getting on the mood, you know. And we always try to incorporate some good melody, because for us, melody is very, very important to having a song. And I think that song has a really good chorus. And then the verses are really fast and heavy, so it's a song that can be meant to be played live as well. I think, you know, feels like that.
Oh yeah, I think that would go over real well live. Definitely Affliction and Disturbia. And you know, I'll bring up one last song here, Trail of Ghost. I like that one a lot. I like how you kind of get softer in there. Your solo in that song is awesome. That one's another good one. And like I said, this record for me has got so much variety, you kind of don't know what you're going to expect from track to track, and I love that when a band does that.
Yeah, exactly. I think the right word I was looking before to say, I think this album has a lot of great, great dynamics, if you want, you know, because we always want to have different kind of songs in the album. We don't want to repeat ourselves, like playing the same patterns and the same arrangements all the time. But we're trying to have different kind of songs and different type of arrangements. And I think that makes the whole album more dynamic and more interesting, if you want.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, what is? I did want to ask you another question. You know, you've had some guest musicians coming on your records over the years, and this album, I think, like you said, this was. I guess you guys really coming together as a band. The seems like the lineup's starting to stabilize. And did you want to stay away from bringing in like a Tom England that's been on a couple albums, or Thomas Lindberg, or somebody like that to come in and, you know, work a little bit with you on it? Did you want to make this more of a group effort?
Definitely. I mean, for us, anyways, Nitrous is a group effort. Nitrous is a band. Yeah, I know. Maybe sometimes we overdo it. Probably on Insidious album we have too many guests. Probably that was a mistake, I think. But that doesn't mean that we can't write our own songs without having any guests. It's not like we're trying to make people like the band because we have a lot of cool guests. And I think the Venomous is a great example of that. Like we don't have any guests, and you know we want to depend on our. On our own, you know, strength, and we can write the you know, really good songs, anyways. You know, if we so we don't actually to bring any more guests in, and you know, just to impress people or to make them, you know, like us more. Like I said before, but I think it's the Venomous is a great example of that. I think.
Oh, I agree, man. I agree. Well, I wanted to ask one last question about the record before we move on to something else. As far as the track listing, is that something you had a lot of say in putting everything together, or was it more the producer? I got a feeling you had a huge part in putting everything together, because the track listing for me, you know, if guys put a lot of thought into it, the listener can get that from the record, because it just flows a certain way. And this record flows very well for me.
Yeah, I mean, we decided this actually internally in the band. It's up to us to decide what we want. And I think this time we wanted to start with a more slower song, like the Venomous, the title track. Because back in the day, we also wanted to start an album with a really fast song, to, you know, just to get the listener in the mood right there. But this time, I think we started with the Venomous. I think it's a kind of change for us, you know, more melodic song. And I'm glad that, like you said, you get the impression that the track list is well thought, and that's the truth. You know, we really put a thought behind it before we, you know, make a track list. We want to have a sort of also, you know, a good continuation between the songs. So there's also that also makes the album more easier for the listener to listen to, you know, and makes it more dynamic and more cohesive, you know, more powerful, you know, in the end of the day.
I agree with you 100%. Well, let me ask you about the cover art. This is a little bit different from you guys, from some of the other covers you guys have had, and I like it. It's kind of a cool drawing, kind of mystical looking. Did you have much say in the cover art for the record?
Yeah, I mean, we're really glad. We're happy with the outcome. This guy, Vangelis Petikas from Greece, is an awesome artist. We asked him some questions, and we wanted to work with him. He made a shirt, t-shirt design for us first. That it was really good, really good. So we decided that we want to work with him because he has a certain style, a really cool style on his drawings. And we told him some stuff about, you know, the concept, and we gave him some demo songs. And you know, he was he came with those amazing designs in the end, and we were really impressed. And I'm very glad with the main cover of the Venomous, that depicting the female demon Marcosias. She's the female demon of war and destruction, and everybody's bowed to her, you know, and it's has to do with the lyrics, like I said, like, because it seems that we love war more than love, you know, through our history as as human beings. And I think he portrayed that in a really, really cool cover with showing this female demon, Makoshes. And actually, that idea for the Makoshes demon came from Ronnie. He has was really inspired sitting in close to Acropolis in Athens writing lyrics. And I think he got this cool idea about this female demon.
Oh, it's cool, man. Very cool. Now, let me ask you, you know, the album's out. What are your tour plans for the summer?
Well, we have a new booker right now. So he's coming from the Netherlands, and he's looking for some shows because we really want to go and play out live. And he's looking for some shows in Europe now in May, and then coming back for a bigger tour in September. And also we are looking for the Americas to play there. We have a huge fan base actually in North America and Canada, and also we want to go back, you know, down to South America. We've never been there, and we're looking for Asia, Japan, and Australia. I mean, every territory that could be possible for us, and we have some good offers and some interest. We want to go and play there, you know, and share the Venomous everywhere that it's possible.
That would be awesome. Hey, tell Gus G to do another solo tour, and then you guys just jump on as the opening act in the U.S.
Sure,
that'd
man.
Be awesome, man.
Yeah.
I would love
sure.
That, man.
That would be kind of a diverse package, definitely.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, man. Hey, and the cool thing is you could bring Gus out for a couple songs, too.
Yeah, I mean, he's all when he's there, he's always come on stage. I mean, we sometimes... we tried that in last time in Japan when we were touring Japan. He was there as well doing some clinics, and then he jumped on the stage. We played a song together from the old times. It was really cool, you know. He's a good friend still, blood brother. I'm very happy for him to be honest with you. You know, he's doing fine. He's doing his own career. He's playing with Ozzy Osbourne and all that stuff. It's kind of amazing if you think about it. Like a guy coming from Greece. A territory, a land that is not well known for the metal and the rock, you know, history, but it's kind of, you know, breaking the rules in a way. That's really cool, I think.
Oh, dude, I agree, because I was introduced to him, I think, with Dream Evil, and then he was playing with you in Night Range on the, you know, first couple records, and all the other little projects that he was doing. I became a big fan, and then for him to get discovered by Ozzy, it was just like, man, that doesn't happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or Kiko Larejo from Angra getting the job with Megadeth. I mean, it's pretty cool that these international guys are getting these, you know, high-profile gigs. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, it shows also there's a lot of unity in the metal world. Doesn't matter where you're coming from, you know. If you're good in what you do, people will appreciate it. And that's Gus is a good example of that, I think. You know, it's really cool.
Awesome, man. Well, last question. Have you guys thought about maybe doing a live DVD at some point for the folks that hadn't been able to see you live yet, like myself?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be cool, actually, to get the chance to do a live DVD. But, hopefully we will get the chance on this album or the next one. You know, you never know. But we always grabbing on good chances, so... hopefully we will do it with the Venomous. It will be really cool.
Awesome. Well, Mario, before we let you go today, do you have anything to tell the fans out there?
Yeah, sure. I just want to say thanks a lot to you for the interview and the interest in the band. Glad you liked the album, and hope that your fans, your listeners will like the album a lot and give it a chance. So go grab the Venomous, steal it, buy it, or stream it, but give it a chance, definitely. And we love you all, guys, and can't wait to see you all on our forthcoming shows. Cheers, man. Bye. Thank you, Marius, very much.
We want to thank you for coming on the Genghis and Ragman show here on the RightToRock.com, and we want to all the fans to get Night Rage's brand new record, The Venomous, out now on D-Spots Records. Marius, awesome talking to you, man. Good luck with everything, and hope to catch you on the road, brother.
Thanks, bro. Thanks. Cheers, man. Bye-bye. Thank you very much. Bye.
has been Genghis
and Ragman,
and you've been listening to the Right to Rock podcast, and we appreciate you listening, and we want to give a big thank you to Tracy G, who is the third unofficial member of the group. We appreciate all of his work, especially the Broken Man song, which is a theme song to the Right to Rock podcast.
And also, we're going to give high props to our boys in Sonic X. Adam and Joseph have lent us 13 to finish the show, so what you're listening to right now is 13 by Sonic X. So check them out, and keep checking us out. And horns up.